Hey everybody, and welcome back to Milkshakes Markets Madness. Sorry, it looks like we lied to you. We are going to be doing one more episode before the year wraps up. And Brent decided to join us for this surprise end of the year episode in his Milkshakes gangster apparel. Speaking of apparel, I don't know if you've ever seen the cash flow t-shirt, but we've got that and a bunch of fun Milkshakes Madness t-shirts that we just put up on the Milkshakes Pod store. So we'll pop a link in there for that. I'll show you some pictures here in the post edit. If you need a last minute Christmas gift or you just want to show us some love, go check out those t-shirts. You guys all voted on the ones you liked anyways. But Brent, tell us what's with the apparel and then we can get into what's been going on the last week.
Well, it's a little bit of two things, John. One, I've been at my son's volleyball tournament all day, and you know they were down, and they made an amazing comeback. My son played very well, and he won the MVP. So cool, we had a very good day of volleyball. So that was pretty cool. And so I've just been wearing this hat all day. And the second thing is I kind of wanted to remind you who won the Super Bowl last year.
Well, yeah, we're getting close to that time of year too. And I don't think either one of our teams are looking like Super Bowl contenders. But
No, they're not.
You never know what happens in playoff time. Well, you know, it is end of the season almost for the NFL. It is almost the end of the season for equities, stocks, investing, all that fun stuff. And it feels a little bit like we're heading into the playoff season and the Super Bowl because surprises abound, right? We had end of the year with a video we called The Great Reset. We put into context where things had come and where they have gone over the last 2 years. We basically had gone full circle. But then, you know, the Fed, they just weren't happy with the results despite pretty much giving themselves a soft landing. And Powell came out with what many are interpreting as a pivot.
Yeah, I mean, I'm the first to hold up my hand and say I was not expecting that at all. And I'm still trying to figure out what's going on. And I'll say this. There's a couple things here, is that not only did he pivot, but the market is now pricing in several cuts for next year, not just one or two cuts. And the pivot happened in such a short period of time that you have to wonder what caused it. Now, there's been a lot of speculation that it's political, that they don't want to cause a recession, you know, leading into a presidential election, you know, and they don't want Trump in, right? And so that's kind of been the most common accepted wisdom of why he pivoted. That's probably part of it, and I won't rule that out. But I will say, for him to pivot as hard as he did in such a short period of time, because he did pivot. Now, whether though they will ultimately end up being all these cuts that everybody expects, that's a whole other thing. But there is no question that he himself pivoted very much in tone and in the words that he said. And so I'm sitting here trying to ask myself, what happened in the 2 weeks that caused him to pivot? There's two parts of this. So the first thing I'm going to say, though, is if we get these cuts that everybody is now expecting, that is not necessarily a market you want to be invested in. In other words, for them to cut six or seven times, there is going to have to be some pain or some underlying problems, significant problems in the markets. Otherwise, we're not getting six or seven cuts. And if we are going from a period where we've got interest rates very high or very high based on recent history, and we are now cutting aggressively, despite markets being at their highs, there's got to be a reason for that. And it can't, and there has to be a reason that Powell is risking inflation reaccelerating. And there has to be a reason that he's doing it, especially after all of the flack they took for the inflation is transitory, right? And so if we do get all these cuts, then there must be something that's kind of scared him and the Fed under the scenes. You know, and think about this. Part of the reason that market conditions have been easing and stocks have been going up is because the expected Fed pivot, which has now kind of arrived. But part of the reason that that has been expected is the data has been getting worse. Now, it hasn't been falling off a cliff, but it's been coming in below expectations, and therefore that has inspired people to front run the Fed pivot and push prices higher. Maybe the Fed sees stuff that we don't see or has a little bit more granular detail, or maybe their forecasts have come in and said, you know what, things are slowing now, but they have the potential to run off a cliff come March, April, May, or June. And maybe they want to get the markets a little higher before that happens. That could be one thing. But again, I would say if the economy is going to be running off a cliff, that's not necessarily a great time to be buying stocks. So that's something to keep in mind. The other thing that I would say is that everything now has swung from one end of the pendulum to the other. So if we go back, and I oftentimes, if people are just tuning in now, we will oftentimes refer back to previous episodes because we've tried to kind of tell a story all year. If you go back to the episode, I believe it would have been the last week of October, pre-Fed meeting, not this most recent Fed meeting, but the previous Fed meeting that took place the first week of November. We talked there how sentiment was getting pretty low, risk off was getting pretty low, and the pendulum was swinging towards extreme fear. Now, it wasn't in extreme territory yet, but it was getting there. And we said that coming out of that Fed meeting, it wouldn't surprise us to get a couple week bounce. And that's exactly what we got. Now, I wasn't surprised to see the bounce from the November Fed meeting kind of into late November, call it Thanksgiving time period. The continued rally from then on has surprised me. But we went from the pendulum being almost all the way on the fear side and oversold side at the end of November. We have gone completely to the other end already. Relative strength is as high as it's been. Daily sentiment index is something I follow. It's as high as, and I'm just talking general equities here. It is as high as it's been. The VIX is as low as it's been, and the sentiment there is as low as it's been. Financial conditions are as low as they have been. You just go through all, the put call ratio is as low as, you just go through it and everything is at the extremes now. And here's the thing. When things are at the extremes, it actually makes things very easy. In other words, this is the time to be careful. Now, it's not necessarily time to go out and sell everything and short everything. I'm just saying this is not the time where you go and you totally load up, because markets do not move in a straight line. Now, this is not to say that equities won't go higher in the short term. Maybe they do. Maybe they get to ultra extreme and uber, uber bullish. But the markets never go in a straight line forever. There will be a pullback. So my point is you can buy something. Let's just use the S&P as an example. You could buy the S&P 3% higher than it is right now, but at a much less risky overall environment. Because if it runs up another 5%, then it will pull back. Everything always pulls back. Sometimes you have to be patient, but it will pull back. Just like gold is pulled back, just like Bitcoin pulled back, just like silver pulled back. Now, it doesn't mean that they won't then rocket higher, but the point is you don't, not only do you not have to, but you should not go all in when markets are where they are right now. The time to go all in is when they're clear the other way. And so I can give you another good example, another episode to refer back to. If you go back to, I think it was the episode that would have been the last week of July. I think I said the exact same thing, because coming out of the July Fed meeting, everything was very bullish. Everything was at the extremes. And, we said, I think that maybe it was the end of June. Maybe it was the end of June. And it took until the end of July, beginning of August, for it actually to roll over. So it took another month before it finally rolled over. And maybe I think equities went a little bit higher during July. But by the time we got to the second week of August, everything was starting to roll over. And then we all know it rolled over very hard into the end of October. So it doesn't, when you get to these levels, it doesn't mean that you automatically go short everything right away. But my point is if you were going to short something, or if you were going to put on hedges, you do it when everything is at the extreme and when insurance is cheap. And that's where things are right now. I think I mentioned this last week, and I'll reiterate it here, is that you can now buy a put on the S&P 500 that is like 1% out of the money. So just below the levels that we're at now, all the way out to June, and it will cost approximately 2 to 2.5% of the overall portfolio. So think about this. If markets continue to rally and we do get all these cuts and they go back to QE or something and it pushes markets up 15% between now, 15 or 20% between now and June, end of June. And you had bought these puts and now you're up 13 while everybody else is up 15, or you're up 16 while everybody else is up 18 or 19. That's not a horrible position to be in. That's still pretty good. But if you buy these puts, and listen, I'm not saying everybody should do this. I'm just using this as an example. But this is the environment where things will pull back. Again, maybe not tomorrow, but sometime in the next couple months, we will get a correction. And if you have these puts, and let's say the market pulls back 5 to 10%, well, you're down one, right? Because you are fully protected all the way through June. And so that's kind of how I think about things. And so for me right now, the decision is actually very easy. I'm not chasing anything here. I'm glad that we own assets, but I'm not chasing everything here. I'm probably going to lighten up a little bit, and I'm probably going to add some hedges here because this is the environment in which you do it. Now, again, we're probably not going to have some cratering between now and the end of the year. Maybe we will, but people probably will try to get to the beginning of the year to sell if they're going to sell, because if they sell now, they're going to have a taxable consequence that's due in April, right? Whereas if they can kind of hold on until January and they sell, then that tax bill doesn't come due for 15 months instead of 3 months. But I just think there was definitely a pivot. I'm still trying to figure out why the pivot came. And I think we will all know by June why the pivot came. And I believe that whether it happens in the next 3 months, or the next 3 weeks, the next 3 months, or the next 6 months, I don't know. But I feel like we will have a correction between now and then. And that, to me, and then everything will be flipped. Everything will be back to the bearish side. The recession is finally here. You know, they had to cut because whatever market's falling apart, the U.S. government can no longer fund. It's whatever the reason is. And the fear will be extremely high. The VIX will be extremely high. Nobody will want to buy equities. And that's the time to go buy equities. That's when you load up, is when nobody else wants to do it. But I would be very careful for anybody who has been waiting. I mean, I had to crack up. I have never heard I was listening to Bloomberg. I always listen to Bloomberg cover the Fed meeting. I have never heard the Bloomberg, the analysts and the people on TV so just joyous. I mean, they were just, I don't even know the word to describe it. They were beside themselves with excitement, how bullish this was. And when everything gets that crazy, I think we've talked about this poem "If" before, right? And you know, if you can keep your head when everybody else is losing theirs, well, everybody's losing their freaking minds right now. And the other thing I would say, and I know I'm rambling here, but the part of the reason we wanted to do this show, even though we weren't going to do another one this year, is this was a fairly big week data-wise, and it was a big week because of the pivot. The other thing I would say is, if you look where markets are right now from where they were right before the Fed announcement, the S&P is up like 1%. The Dow's up like 1%. The NASDAQ's up like 1%. Now, the Russell, which is the small companies, it's up 5%. Gold's up 3 or 4%. Silver's up 5%. So the high growth stuff, it's funny because, and the 7 technology stocks kind of did pretty good, but overall NASDAQ didn't. The point is that the huge rally did not really come after the Fed meeting, with the exception of the Russell and the metals. Most of the rally that we've seen came over the last 3 weeks, not the last 3 days. Now, they definitely popped after the Fed meeting, but they haven't really run away. So it's, to me, it's going to be very interesting to see where we're at 2 weeks from now. My guess is that we'll probably be flat to down a little bit. I don't think we're going to hardcore rally further from here. Maybe we will. But again, if we, to me, it's an easy decision right now. And if, in, as we said last week, if we rally from here into the beginning of the year, then I will be shorting the market come January.
Well, everybody, there's your 15 minutes. Have a great day. We'll talk to you guys all real soon. one of the tricky parts of doing this show with Brent is we kind of have a sense. I mean, we're both in the markets, right? We're watching it. We have a sense of where we're going with the show. And sometimes
I told John, we're only going to do a 15-minute show. That's where he's going with this. And
that's
his
classic line. Oh, it's just a quick 10 minutes. Quick 15 minutes max. But it's also, he ends up covering so much that it's just like, okay, we got to reel this back in. So first, some of the episodes that you're kind of highlighting, you're talking in that October timeframe. My guess is, looking at some of the show notes, some of the show titles, it's probably, if it's a full-length conversation, it's probably the Burn It Down episode or Dollar Event Horizon. Now, what's interesting around that time, and it's also right around the Golden War episodes, this is all this, you know, conflict in Israel and Gaza. But we also did a number of Monday Peak of the Week videos that, when I look at the show notes and the titles of those videos, they're very kind of Fed focused. One's called Wild Ride, the other's Pied Piper, and the other one's Debt Dogma. So those are all very much, so I don't think you're going to get a concise conversation around what you're focusing on just one of those episodes, but certainly go in that time frame and consume some of that. But this, again, it's been a theme all year, is just trying to balance between when sentiment is at extremes, while also kind of keeping in mind, which is why I think the Great Reset, you know, tongue-in-cheek title from last week was so relevant, because people just get so caught up in all these frenzies and it's a bull market, and particularly with this show and your personality, like, oh, Brent, you missed it. And it's like, well, not really. It's just been sideways. So there's definitely some of that. Now, what I want to do here, because it's late in the evening for you, so I kind of want to take advantage of that and poke at you a little bit here with the earlier part of your conversation talking about, I mean, really it's everything you just covered, but the core of the beginning was the Fed's pivot. Now, what's interesting here is definitely the tone was extremely dovish. He made reference, which I think is what really kicked everything off and just, you know, started the party all over again, was in when he made reference to the committee actually talking about rate cuts. But what's kind of funny about that is, number one, whether you give it a lot of credence or not, the dot plot's been saying that all along. So it's said in words in a press conference, but the writing's been on the wall for quite some time. We can also look at various things like yield curve inversions and rate hiking cycles data. You know, once they do this, then 8 months later, this happens. So we can generally get a sense from cycles that we're headed that way anyway. But like you said, what's the reason? We don't quite know. The other pushback I'll make too is it doesn't necessarily need to be a crisis. I mean, if the Fed is good at doing their job at all, which neither one of us like the Fed, but we're just trying to look at this objectively, put ourselves in a different frame of mind instead of just, you know, browbeating the crap out of central banks. If their goal is equilibrium, then if we're talking inflation cooling, we're at 2%, even call it 3%, real rates are over 2%. The Fed doesn't want that. That's too tight. So how do you start to ease into this where maybe in their defense, they're like, we're stuck, because if we wait until March where maybe real rates are 3% and it's very, very clear, everyone's going to blame us for being political in our decision. So maybe it's a bit of front running some of that.
I think that's fair. And, you know, here's the thing. I took a lot of crap this week for saying that Powell has done a pretty good job. And listen, I don't mind it. I love these conversations because I think it really gets to the emotion of markets. You know, I'm not a fan of central bankers. And I, you know, to be clear, I still think this is going to end very, very badly. This story does not have a happy ending. But I kind of feel like, you know, a coach of a football team, and we're playing in a big game, and we're down at halftime. And as I'm walking off the field to go talk to my players, you know, the ESPN reporter comes up and says, "Hey, coach, you guys didn't play so good the first quarter. The other team scored 14 points. You know, what do you got to do differently in the second half?" Now, I'm not going to come out and say that other team sucks. They're really rude and they're not very nice guys and they're really hurting the overall sport. You know, I'm able to look at the other team and, you know what, say they did some pretty good things. You know, we've got to do some better things on our end, but, you know, give credit where credit is due. That's just, I mean, that's how I grew up being an athlete, and that's just part of the game. And so when I look at the Fed, to me, the Fed's kind of, you know, on the other side of the line from me, right? They're kind of the team that you're playing against, or they're the people you're trying to figure out. And again, 2 years ago, nobody thought that we could get to where we are right now. Now, nobody has said the game is over. Nobody has said that we've lost and they've won. There's still a lot of time left to go. I'm first to admit that. But so far, Powell, I think, and the Fed in general has done a pretty good job with the rate hiking cycle. Now, in the previous game, right, when they let inflation go crazy and they bailed everybody out, I'm not going to praise them and give them much credit for that previous game. But in this game, during the rate hiking cycle and managing this process, from if you analyze a central banker, what they are supposed to do, they have done what they're supposed to do. And now what they're trying to do, and I think this is part of the pivot, is they are trying to stick the soft landing. We've talked about this a little bit, John, right? Is that I think when they started this, that Powell and probably the Fed in general did not think that they would be able to slow inflation without causing a recession. And the further they got along, I think even they were a little surprised. A lot of us were surprised. I think even they were surprised at how far they got along with asset prices holding up and inflation coming down. And as they got closer and closer, I think they started to think, you know what, maybe, just maybe, we can pull this off, right? And now as we get further along, and now I think they're actually trying to stick the soft landing. Now, I don't think that they're going to, but I think that's what they're trying to do. And he even referenced this, you know, if we want inflation to kind of, you know, fall to 2% and kind of stay around 2%, well, then we've got to start slowing down before we get there. We can't just slam on the brakes at 2% because then we risk overshooting to that direction. And, you know, he kind of takes a little flack for that, but that's actually right. You know, when you're landing the plane, you don't land the plane going, you know, full speed. You do slow down and try to bring it in and land it without killing everybody. And so I think what he said is actually correct. You know, if you are going to try to stop inflation, because remember, they do want 2% inflation. And in reality, they probably want 3-4%. They just can't say that for, you know, political reasons. But they want inflation. They want inflation, but they want it to be low and manageable. They don't want this to go back to deflation, because that's what central bankers were created to stop deflation. So the last thing they want to do is create a ton of it. And again, I think that they want to slow the economy, but they don't want to bring the whole system down. And so that's, I think, as this potential soft landing gets closer, that's what they're trying to do. And the market, by front running them, is making it more likely that they get it, or it's giving it the appearance that it's more likely. Now, again, I actually think this is going to end up backfiring spectacularly. I don't think that this is going to work the way the market seems to think it's going to work. I think for them to be cutting 6 or 7 times, things need to be really bad. And when things are really bad, stocks don't typically go straight up in the air. And so by no means do I think that they have pulled this whole soft landing off, but so far they've done a pretty good job. And so to your point, I think that is part of what they're doing. I think they're trying to get ahead of what's coming. And I think what they see coming is not necessarily sunshine and rainbows.
Well, there's also this narrative that the central banks are causing these booms and these busts intentionally so they can, you know, make the rich richer and create this wealth gap and wealth disparity. I kind of look at it more as, I'm sure there's some of that. They're part of the inside baseball team, but they'd like to be able to play whatever manipulation that they're actually playing quietly in the shadows. And really, since the GFC, they've become so front and center where everyone is aware of them existing, where I just don't think there was that type of emphasis. So if they can pull off something even remotely close to a soft landing, and not create, you know, or wait until there's massive deflation and slowly disappear out of the limelight. At least my take is, I think that's what they want to do. They want to be the Wizard of Oz again, behind the curtain, not have the curtain wide open and everyone paying attention to them. And it seems like markets keep trying to pull that curtain back. And you talked about this a little bit, but so we can give it some context, because it was a pretty wild move the last week, certainly the last month. The market's now priced in, like you're saying, almost 7 rate cuts for 2024. I think it was last week or just the week before that, we are talking about how, you know, an 80% chance of a March rate cut was pretty extreme. Well, now the market's pricing in all kinds of cuts. There was a $2 trillion rise in the value of aggregate bonds and stocks in the last 3 days, $7 trillion since the start of November, just before the November FOMC. World equity and bond markets added $4 trillion this week alone, and over $15 trillion since the November FOMC. The S&P 500 is up 7 weeks in a row. This is the longest winning streak in 6 years, since November 2017. And it only took 48 days for the Russell 2000 to go from the 52-week low to the 52-week high. This is the shortest turnaround in the index's 45-plus year history. So everything we've been talking about all year has really been a climax of the last month, where things are incredibly volatile, going from lows to highs. And now we're on this extreme, which, like you addressed earlier in the conversation, is kind of the time that you want to step back and maybe not go as full throttle as everybody else is. Now, before we wrap up, Brent, the not so secret gold bug, you know, you are also getting a lot of flack for, you know, pushing back against, you know, this is liftoff time for precious metals. You know, we had gold hovering around or getting close to 2100, and then it very quickly pulled back to the mid 1900s and really sucked the air out of the room. Then you had some of the activity that started midweek after the FOMC. Gold shot up over 2000 again. Then you had the jawboning and the talking back, or at least trying to walk back some of the Powell pivot comments from other central bankers like Williams and Bostic. And then gold pulled back down, hovering right above 2000. So it feels like it's almost trading like a penny stock. What's your take at this point before we wrap up on some of the price action in precious metals?
So my take on gold is pretty similar to equities. Like, when I saw gold trading up above 2100 a week ago, whenever that was, or 2 weeks ago now, you just know that's not going to last like that. It's not that it's not going to last. It's not going to continue to rise at that same speed. This markets do not work that way. So when markets get like that, and it's any market, it doesn't, you know, it's even with the dollar, right? If we go back 15 months ago now, or 12, whenever the dollar peaked, maybe it was 13 months ago. You know, we even said here, when the dollar the dollar's going to pull back, we even said it's very likely to pull back here, because markets just don't always go in a straight line. So whether it's equities or gold, whenever you see something going like that, just step back and take a breath. Because if you start chasing buying those, you are somebody else's exit liquidity, right? You want to buy the stuff when it's beat up, and then when it rockets higher, you sell it. Right? Or if you're trading something, that's how you do it. Maybe I know there's a lot of people out there who don't consider gold a trading vehicle. It's something you just buy and hold forever. But even if that's not you, there are a lot of people who do trade. And so if you are buying, if you're planning to buy and hold, and you're trying to buy gold when it's up $200 or $300 from where it was a month ago, you are a trader's exit liquidity. You don't really want to be somebody else's high profit exit liquidity. And as a general rule, that doesn't work out very well typically. Now, sometimes it does, but again, there's always exceptions. But in general, you don't want to be somebody's exit liquidity. So I kind of think that gold is the same. Again, sentiment on gold and silver now is very high. It's pulled back a little bit from where it was a week ago, obviously. But I think markets have gotten way too ahead of themselves. Again, I think directionally they're correct. I think people are thinking about things correctly. But it's just gone way too far, way too quickly. And whenever markets go like that, whatever it is, I don't care whether it's seashells or oil or gold or stocks or bonds, like, things always pull back. Look at bonds is a good example. You know, you just touched on bonds, like how much money was made in bonds over the last 2 months. Well, bonds were just a steady ride lower for the last 18 months, but markets don't always go there. And as soon as everybody was losing their mind about you know, the U.S. could not fund its government anymore and nobody wanted treasuries anymore. Well, what does treasuries do? They turn them out and they make a huge rally. And I have to say, remember a couple of months ago when Druckenmiller came out and said he was super bullish on the 2-year bond? My God, he could. That's why he's a legend, right? Like, he called that perfectly. And that's why we all want to be him and nobody is him, because there's only one guy like Druckenmiller. But again, you know, bonds are now so bullish the other way. I think those are probably going to reverse sometime in the next couple of weeks. I think if you are just buy and hold and forget it, then that's great. And if you just listen to these shows for the educational part of it and you just kind of know what's going on, that's great. But if you're trading, you don't necessarily want to be buying when sentiment's in the 90s and, you know, the VIX is in single digits. You want to be selling in those environments and then buying in the other ones. And I think that and to do that, you have to get two things. For you to be a good trader, two things have to happen. You have to be willing to sit there with FOMO. You have to be willing to miss out. You have to be willing to let somebody else make the money on a trade if you're not in it. And then you have to have the guts to buy when nobody else wants to. And both of those, doing both of those things requires managing your emotions. Because the biggest problem that all of us have, me included, is managing our own emotions. And once you can kind of sit back and say, you know what, good for them, they're making money, I don't have to make that money, it's going to make your life a lot easier. And so listen, if people make a lot of money in equities over the next couple of weeks, I'll make a little bit, they'll make a lot. I'm happy to let them make that money over the next couple of weeks. Because I think if they continue to try to invest in that environment, they're going to end up like Evel Knievel jumping over the fountain at Caesars. You know, it's going great. But if you don't stick the landing, you know, it's all for naught. And to me, this is just not a time to be Evel Knievel.
It's a good exclamation point there, Brent. You're getting better at managing these late night conversations. It's a late in the season conversation. And, you know, when it comes to emotions, next year being election year, I think there's going to be a lot of that. And that'll probably be more of the theme that we drive home next year, is managing those emotions both in markets as some of this starts to change, perhaps unravel like Brent thinks. Regardless of what's going on in the markets, we're definitely going to have this social tension with the election coming up. So, hey, keep your heads. Sometimes you can lose your head during the holiday season with family and relatives and all the chaos. But you know what? Even if Jerome Powell comes out with an announcement of QE6 tomorrow, this is going to be it for 2023 for the Milkshakes Markets Madness Show. We appreciate you joining us for this surprise weekend episode. Brent, we appreciate you coming on late in your day. Congrats to you and your son on a great volleyball appearance. And anyone, again, who's looking for a last-minute Christmas gift, check out the Milkshakes Pod t-shirts. I'll stick a link in the show notes. There's some good ones up there. Many of you voted for the ones you liked. So check that out. Grab yourself a shirt. Join the Milkshakes fam. You can join and follow us on Twitter, Brent specifically at Santiago AU Fund. You can find me at John Kutzmita. You can find this show both on Twitter and at YouTube using the handle Milkshakes Pod. That should wrap it up. Brent, I won't close down without giving you the chance to say one last thing. So go ahead.
Well, you know, I sent out a tweet earlier today, and it's just some advice. If anybody's at, you know, kind of a boring Christmas party or family dinner and you need a little excitement, here's what you do. You find somebody that you know, obviously, but you don't know them really well. And you just go up to them, you start talking to them, and then you put your hand on their shoulder and you lean in and you whisper, I just want you to know that I personally don't have any problem with you being here. And you just leave it at that and see where it goes.
Well, there you go. Lots of great advice this year, but that's probably the best of the year. So everyone, we appreciate you. Have a great holiday. Safe travels. Happy New Year. We can't wait to see all of you in 2024. This show is provided for entertainment and informational purposes only. It should not be relied upon as legal, business, investment, or tax advice. Neither the hosts, guests, nor any funds they may manage intends to make an offer or solicitation for the sale or purchase of any specific securities, investments, or investment strategies.